page 2, where he says, "Umeuvda daharuge lud shayvik votavato." On the case of haruge lud, where they voluntarily confessed to a crime that they didn't commit, if you remember, in order to save the entire community, "Ein ra'aya afilo al hatzalach radim the mutal imsarach nafshel makom she'eno chayav." You cannot be proved. You cannot bring any proof from that incident that it's permissible to sacrifice one's life to save others. "Sheyesh lomar v'hatam im lo hayu heim makablim ha'atzvam gam kein hayu neharogim b'toch haklal." After all, they were trapped in the same city, and therefore, if they did not give themselves up, they would get killed anyway. "Sheharei ha'malchut gazra ha'gzera al kol Yisrael v'chai gavna shebelav hachi yahareg harei ein kan mishum v'chai v'hem." The principle of v'chai v'hem won't apply when you're going to be killed anyway. "U'pshita shemitzvah shel chasidut gedolah hilim so nafsho." The fact that they did voluntarily give up their lives to save others is certainly a great mitzvah. Others, in fact, didn't do that. But nevertheless, you can't bring any proof from that that a person is allowed to put his own life in danger or sacrifice his own life in order to save others. Okay?
I was Esther.
No, Esther, next page. Okay. Umi Esther, he writes. Umi Esther, he writes. You're one step ahead of him. Umi Esther. There's no proof from Esther at all. Sharei katav Rashi b'perush ha-megillah sham sheheshiv la Mordechai mi yodea im lo tehi gam at b'klal ha-gzera. Mordechai said to her, "Look, after all, you're Jewish, and who knows that you're going whether who knows that you're going to be able to hide your religion and survive?" Vim Cain, he says, "Havi hayasafeka shakul." As far as she is concerned, she had to just simply weigh her chances. The safek sveka hayalit lot, she timzachain beinav, v'yoshitlat shavita vazahav. On the one hand, there was a possibility that he will, like the king, would extend the golden scepter and she would survive. V'yim timzaloma shelot timzachain. Hello, Benko, Benko, Esha Gamken, Shitin, Ereget, and Makla. If she, Ubahai Gavna, Vadai Chiuvika, Ulai Hikria, Shah Safek Shom, Tzir Chain, Beinav, who Yoter Karov, Me Safek Shematimaleti, Beit Amel. Maybe she just made a cold and calculated decision, he says, that she thought the chances of her getting access to the king now were far greater than the chances of her surviving a general persecution of the Jews a year down the line. And if that's the case, then certainly she should take the risk now, as the Shavus Yaakov has already decided for us. Im kein, im lo tevakesh, harei hi v'chol Yisrael v'sakana. V'kishetevakesh, hi machnisat atzma v'sakanat chayei she'ab yoter mukdam. So Esther must have known of this tshuva of the Shavuos Mordechai and acted accordingly, that you're allowed to take a risk of losing this year of life in order
to gain a longer life.
Now he comes to your question. Midat chayesha azu enok tzuva kal kach. The definition of what constitutes chayesha is not so clearly defined. V'nidon d'day, the case that the Shavuos Yaakov was talking about, who v'cholesh arofim omrim shem lo yaseh lo nituach yemut v'echrech mecha machal azu. Maybe even 12 months might be considered as a temporary life as far as this is concerned. In terms of a young woman who has a whole life in front of her, perhaps 1 year is also construed as being chayesha. V'im kein, he says, afilu v'lo hatzalat ha'abim. He says, forget about whether she was saving the Jewish people or not. Gam kein hayta yechola v'shvil hatzalat atzma lachnis et atzma l'safek zeh. He says, forget about whether she was out to save the Jewish people. Even if she was out to save her own skin, it would be a rational risk for her to take, namely to risk being killed by not having the golden scepter extended to her now, because she might have estimated that there were more chances of succeeding now than succeeding a year down the line. V'ayta choshevet she'asur lo limsor nafsha, v'im kein b'shvil hatzalat rabim mitzva v'chol v'ayka, v'yesh lo mishum etkila chashva she'al yichayeh lo yeh לא יש ספק כלל, והייתה חושבת שעשו למסור נשא לאחר ולאחר שהורה למורכה שיש ספק גם על חייה, שום הכירה את ההתאם ונמלא את החובה. אם כן, אפילו לא היה זה עניין הנוגע לכלל ישראל, לא הייתה גם כן קושיה מאסתר. He says, there's no proof whatsoever from אסתר. מי הוא? הדבר מצד עצמו מסתבר, דאין לך, well, let's skip this. That's what I want to go to. Let's go to page 5 in the Shura, so I'm skipping about a page. V'hine, ma shenireh l'kvod Torato d'zeh pashut. What you see as simple. She'egam eino resha'i l'ansor et atzmo k'dei l'atzil et chaveiro. That a person is not allowed to sacrifice himself to save his fellow man, but as far as the public is concerned, there's no obligation, but it's permissible. That would be the first, simplest view. I have a lot of trouble with this. Your statement that a man is not allowed to sacrifice his life to save his friend, you take that as a clear-cut statement, I say that I have a lot of trouble with this. Shaharei Rashi hisbir lanu milta b'taima, d'rotseach svaro hu mehido Rava. The Gemara, remember, says that Rava claimed that the reason though you can't kill somebody else in order to save your life was a svaro. D'amalei maichazi t'damadi dach sumak tveh. Who says that your blood is redder? V'zeh l'shona, this is what Rashi wrote. Svarahi shelo titche nefesh chaveiro, v'ika tarki t'ibud v'shama v'aveira. It's logical that you shouldn't take your fellow Jew's life, your fellow man's life, because there is a loss of life and a crime and murder. Rashi is explaining, one life is going to be lost here anyway. So what is the logic? If you kill the other person, then a life has been lost and a murder has been committed by you. But if you allow yourself to be killed, okay, a life has been lost, but no crime has been committed by you.
You say the crime.
When the Torah says that you're allowed to violate the mitzvah in order because of the principle of living by the Torah, that a Jewish soul is precious in his eyes. One way or the other is a loss of life. Why are you allowed to commit a crime? That's Rashi's explanation. This principle of v'chayvahem eino davar prati dafka al oto ha'ish. It's not telling this particular individual that he has to sacrifice everything to his own personal survival. Ha'oseh o ha'maneah o ha'balish o. The principle is that you should try to save Jewish lives. And therefore your life is also included in this principle of attempting to save lives. We don't decide that one life is better than another because of this principle of who says that your blood is red. We have no reason for prohibiting a person from sacrificing his own life to save his fellow's life. כיוון שכל האיסור אפילו לדעת הרמב״ם שהוא מתחייב לנחשו כמסעד נחשו במקום שאינו מחויב לכל צורך לא מדוע משום מסביר לידי וחי בו אמין רבו לכתוב מסירת נפש אלא חייבו שיחיה בהם. ואם נאמר שהרמב״ם מודה גם כן לרשי, if we agree that the Rambam agrees with Rashi that v'chai v'hem הוא עניין כללי, אם כן מצד v'chai v'hem הכל הוא שווה אם בן ישראל זה יחיה או אחר. The Duvad is an issue is that you try to save as many lives, Jewish lives, but not your own life. ויש לו גם הרמב״ם מודה בשליחות עמים, אם רוצה למסור נחשו ביד חברו רשאי. But the Rambam might also agree, even though Rambam says v'chayev v'nachshel, he's referring to all other mitzvot. If you sacrifice your life in order not to be mechalel Shabbos, then the Rambam is saying that you're mechayev v'nachshel. But if you sacrifice your life to save somebody else's life, since in total a life has been saved here, then you fulfill the commandment of v'chayev. That's his.
That's how we have to jump in the water and save the drowning person.
Yes, you're certainly obligated to jump in the water to save the drowning person if you can swim. If you can't swim,
you may die in the process.
If you may die in the process, there is no obligation, right? You're not obligated.
How do you know? Well,
you know if you can swim, and you know if you can save somebody by pulling. I mean, and remember you had that famous dispute between Rabbi Akiva and Ben Ketira when there's only one jug of water. V'yesh lomar the Rabbi Akiva the Amar Chayav Kodim lo ba ela l'shol svaras Ben Ketira shemutav sheyishnu shneihem v'yamutu. That they certainly both should not die. But v'ratzal yitein l'chavero mishum shechayei chavero yikarim etzlo michayav v'chahayav ne'yesh lomar shegam eni sur medavar afilu v'yachid l'gabayyav. We have no proof, Rav Kook says, we have no proof that says that a person is not allowed to act altruistically when it comes to the issue of saving somebody else's life. On this issue, Satmu Aleinu Rabotenu Avota Orazal et Adera Shel HaMishkalka. Our rabbis have sealed the possibility of making judgments here. V'nirah Mislimatam שאפילו אם אנו רואים שאחד הוא אדיוט וקטן שבישראל, even if we see that one person is a lowly man, והשני הוא גדול ורם ונשיא בתורה ומעשים טובים, and the other is a great man, מכל מקום אנו מבטלים את דעתנו, we suppress our judgment, ונאמר האדם יראה לעיניים, the man can only see what is visible, ויש כאן מי חזית, and we apply the principle of who says whose blood is redder. Ve'ein dochin nefesh b'mnei nefesh. V'mnan ba'alot, the ma'itin olam b'perek ben sorer amore, v'katan ha'nolat she'yatzor ubo, in the case of a baby that's born, and most of the baby has already been born, so he has his own identity, she'ein nogin bo la'atzil et imo al yado. Up until the baby has actually been born, you're allowed to kill the baby in order to save the mother's life. However, once the child has mostly emerged, one is not allowed to do that. Ve'ein v'zeh chiluk afilu im tiyeh ha'en gedola v'yisrael u'masim tovim u'nevi'ah. And it doesn't matter what type of stature the mother has. L'mashal k'miriyam u'dvarav u'chul d'l'chiyotzeh. Even if the mother is one of the great women of Israel, one is not allowed to say that you can kill somebody else's, the child's life, in order to save hers once the child has been born. U'l'cha'urat zarech adav v'talmud minolam. We have to understand why is there such a principle. Kevan de ikar davar svarahu d'may chazid. V'harei le'inyan l'achayoto, when it comes to the issue of saving lives, she'anu machalkim et ha'madreigot. We do set up some criteria, a triage, whose life to save and whose life not to save. U'kitnan ha'ayot ha'ish kodem le'isha, v'kohen kodem le'levi, v'talmud chacham lo'am ha'oretz, and so on. V'zehu b'lachayoto k'shehim tovim b'na'av. When you have people who are drowning in the river and there's only room on the lifeboat for so many, you do make some judgment as to whom to save and whom not to save. Ukamo shekatav Rama ba'agal yodeh simurenu ishmin beis, and kein lomo lo yachuya mishkal zeh shelanu gam kein et hasvarad amai chazit. If we're allowed to make a judgment as to whom to save, so we do make an estimate on occasion as to the relative value of lives, why can't we make it into this circumstance? ואפילו ביחיד נגד רבים, היה גם כן נראה שמסבר כששניהם שווים באיכותם, הייתה צריכה הכמות להכריע את הסברה. If you have people of equal caliber, then presumably, if you were making a decision as whom to save, and you were able to save with one act five people, and were with another act only one person, presumably the logic is clear that you save the five rather than the one. Why can't you apply that logic here as well when it's the issue of taking a life? ואם אחד גדול היה צריך לכאורה דבר להיות תלוי בעומר על פי בית דין מומחים כמה נפשות כדאי להיות עולל תמורתו ואם המשקל הזה כבד מאוד even if these types of decisions are extremely onerous, very hard to do הלו על זה נאמר אין לו לדיין אלא מה שאין עבור this is precisely where a judge has to rely on his judgment ונסתרות בשם אלוקינו ונגלות לנו לבנינו ועל כל פנים, אם לא נכרחי כל כך לעניין העומד הנסתר של יחיד לגבי רבים, אבל גבי יחיד ויחיד, למה נסתם עלינו הפתח במקום שאנו מוצאים החילוקים וברורים? Why have the rabbis prevented us, why have Chazal prevented us from making these kinds of choices? ונראה, ויחיד לגבי רבים ושבים גם כן היו להיות כך. ונראה לעני את דעתי לשער, שהדבר נובע The origin of this law is Mimasha Pasak Harambam Beperk Chaf Misanhedrin Halacha Aleph Shelo La'ano Shel Pi Omer Hadaat B'dinei Nefashot that one is not allowed to use circumstantial evidence in capital cases. Be'arich B'seif HaMitzvot B'Svarat HaTam Sha'af Al Pi Sheyeshnan Umdonot Berurot Sheim Kimat B'Sug HaVadaot Sometimes circumstantial evidence is so strong as to be overwhelmingly convincing. Close to certainty, actual certainty. Kehad Shimon ben Shetach, like the case of the man that was running in after the other fellow with a knife, and he comes out the other end with a knife, blood dripping from his hand, and so on. Mikol makom, kevan shahashar hazeh shelo umdano tu rachav ma'od ve'eino gadul. Since this gate of using judgment, circumstantial evidence, is very broad and is not clearly demarked, And it's easy to pass from a clear judgment to a doubtful judgment call, or even a fraudulent judgment call. The Torah has closed this gate to us entirely. Shelo na'ase ma'ase b'harigat adam al yedei umdatenenu afilu kishi brura ma'od. That one is not allowed to use one's own judgment on capital matters, even when it's clear. And that's the Rambam's interpretation of the passage from the Sefer, from Medrash of the passage of the Naki v'tzadik al taharog. Shemipi ha-shmua lamdu chazal dekoi al stimat ha-delet b'pnei umdina b'dinei nefashot. U'birer shem od sheyoter tov lanu sheyeh harbei chayavim bilti nishpatim that it's better that 100 guilty go free than one innocent mishit his damein bezvan mehiasmanim harigat tzaddik v'naki. Ayein b'seifa ha-mitzvah ha-tzorat ha-chersa. Ve'ein ha-safek kakir yari ha-tzorat. Yesh lomar she-gam mesirat nefesh v'nira she-b'chol makom she-anu tzrichim la-asot ma'aseh b'nefesh any time where we're obligated to take an active step in the taking of a life v'klal dinei nefashotu. That's considered a capital case. With the Chuvap Samim Rosh, etc., he goes into this discussion. So the main point that he's made, we studied this many years ago, and I'm just simply repeating the opinions that I expressed then now. He's saying that in capital cases, one has to worry not only about whether the facts are true or convincing in this particular case, but one has to have well-established procedures to avoid abuse. So that whereas, as far as in other places and other Dinei Torah, the usage of an umdana is permissible. If there's convincing evidence to the judge, when the judge is allowed to use his presumptive capacities of assessing the evidence to come to a decision, because of the possibilities of abuse, in Dinei Nefashot, the Torah has clearly demarked that you have to have two witnesses or three witnesses.
The actual lie.
Yes, so what concerns us here, what concerns me here is it's not the matter of whether the rules of evidence are two witnesses or three witnesses or what have you, but you need, in capital cases, clearly be marked rules of evidence because you have the capacity of deterioration of the procedures into abuse. And so what Rav Kook is saying is that in a situation where you're actively taking a life, then you can't apply judgment as to the relative value of life or the quality of life or what have you, but because that's subject to abuse. But when a person is deciding whether to be altruistic and sacrifice his own life, that's not considered dinei nefashot. There's no judge there. He's not being judged by somebody else, and therefore it doesn't fall under that capacity, and therefore it doesn't prohibit altruism. So as we've said before, this distinction between action and inaction, I don't think is a validly possible distinction any longer today. With the advent of medical procedures and so much intervention in medicine, it's very hard to say what constitutes an act and what constitutes a passive failure to act. I mean, if people are all on respirators and you turn them off once a day for 2 or 3 minutes to clean them and then turn them on again, is not turning the respirator on a something active or something passive? I mean, obviously, someone who's had polio and has been on a respirator for 20 years and can look forward to another 20 years of productive life, not turning on the respirator is clearly murder, even though, in a certain sense, all that you're doing is something passive, not engaging. So that my feeling is that the classical criterion in all of these situations, namely the distinction between active intervention or passive non-intervention, no longer applies. But what, and of course, the first step in that direction was exactly the tshuva of the Shus Yaakov that we saw. And the way out, it seems to me, as I mentioned the last time when we studied this 5 or 6 years ago, is that you have to take Rav Kook seriously. What you need to do is to have a situation where well-established procedures are put in place within the medical profession, within the rabbinical profession, and so on, so that you are going to replace the distinction between active intervention or passive non-intervention by agreed-upon procedures which will in themselves protect against abuse. What those procedures are, how they should be implemented, and so on, is something that obviously will take many years to evolve. But the ingredients for dealing with this problem, I think, we find in this tshuva of Rav Kook and in the preceding tshuva of the Shus Yaakov that we studied. Okay, we'll stop here. I had no idea what the topic would be next week, but since it's such a difficult, it'll be something different.
The hope would be very much against.